when you're ready, let's start this game.
Welcome to Unstacked and Let's Unwind with award-winning romance author Quanah Jackson. Let's find out about her writing process and her latest in the Real Men Knit series, Not Again. Hey, this is Sarah from the Bay County Public Library.
Hey, this is Stephen from the Huntsville-Madison County Public Library.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. I'm so happy to be here. I'm Quanah Jackson, who also writes as KM Jackson, the author of Real Men Knit, Not Again, and How to Marry Keanu Reeves in 90 Days.
So you've written several titles that we want to talk about today, but can you introduce our listeners to the Real Men Knit series featuring the Strong Brothers and the newest title, Not Again?
The Real Men Knit series is a series that is really near and dear to my heart. It's about four brothers who were all adopted out of foster care by the same mom in Harlem. It's set in Harlem, which is where I was born and raised. And they all have different ethnicities. And I'm giving no spoilers away because it's right on the back cover copy, I believe. Either way, it's right on page one. Their mom, Mama Joy, suddenly passes away of a heart condition. So in this series, they're each dealing with their grief and their love of Mama Joy. But since I write romance, they're each finding love along the way while they deal with this. So it's them dealing with grief, finding love, and also what this knitting shop means to them and the community. So it's their healing, love, and grief. Someone called it community romance, which I thought was such a good tag for it because it's definitely romance, but I did end up, and I think it's because of my Harlem background, putting a lot of community into it, which I couldn't help it because I think I was just so engrossed in the setting and sort of bringing a little bit of my upbringing into it that it turned into a lot of community in the story.
One of the aspects I love is just the group of women that used to go when Mama Joy was there, and they're following what the brothers are doing and they are involved. So I really enjoyed their relationship.
Maybe sometimes a little too involved.
Yeah, but it's so fun.
They're cute. I love each of them so much. They all feel like home to me. I really modeled them, though I'll never say who's who, but I really modeled them after friends of my late Nana. I made the story sort of an homage to the Harlem that I knew growing up, which was, my grandmother used to call it the Village of Harlem. And that's very much what the older people called it. Harlem is very much its own little village, which is like a lot of the neighborhoods in New York. People who are New York transplants or who see New York from movies and entertainment see it as this bright lights, big city, kind of one note type of place. But really, New York is made up of lots of tiny little neighborhoods and villages. And you can just go two blocks and you're in a whole different sort of town, sort of small town. So New York really is in a very small amount of mileage, which would make up if you're in a more rural area, say Alabama, you would take 20 something miles, which is Manhattan, and that would be a whole small town. And it would feel like it, but you take that 20 something miles in Manhattan and you've got a bunch of different little neighborhoods. Say you go from the bottom where there's the Wall Street area, and then you've got Chinatown, Little Italy, Midtown, you've got Harlem, and then, you know, you're going up to Washington Heights and then past that to the Bronx. And you've got lots of little micro villages in between, and they really change block by block. So I wanted to really show that in our small little couple of acres radius, what the block was. So yeah, that's what I wanted to do.
You kind of started down this path, and I wanted to kind of expand a little bit here. How much real life do you put into your writing?
Of course, there's a disclaimer on the front of every book that says it's all fiction, so I don't get sued. And for me, it's definitely an escape. My writing is an escape for me, and I hope it's a lovely escape for my readers. So there's definitely going to be a whole lot of escapism into it. But I can't, as a writer as a woman in the world and as a Black woman in the world, can't totally escape the real world. And I write contemporary fiction. So there is always going to be a certain amount of real life that seeps into it. So I'm constantly sort of fighting with myself on that. And I can never say how much real life I put into it because I don't consciously go in trying to put a certain amount of real life into my work, but it just sort of seems to just sneak in. And I always find out how much it is after the book is written. And my editor will tell me how much real life I put in and be like, oh, that's a little too much. Or, you know, you got to pull this back here or not. But Not Again was a really painful book to write, honestly. I wrote it during the pandemic and rewrote it during the pandemic. So that was a tough one, being that it's marketed as a rom-com, but I was writing it during a really hard time. And romance writers were having a really, really tough time during the pandemic. It's like how light you can be when you're not feeling so light and you're trying to bring light to people. And we didn't know, do we put pandemic elements in it? So I was sort of writing it like after the pandemic with pandemic elements, and then had to rewrite it, take it all out, which is really difficult. So it's just difficult. It's just hard. And this series, honestly, I found out there's maybe a little bit more real life than I expected, dealing with the grief parts and things like that, and sort of brother parts and all of that. I finished it and things. And then I realized I have a brother who I lost, I'm the oldest sister. And I saw later from other people that more probably of my own grief and loss of my brother came through. But I didn't think of any of that when I was writing it. Other people pointed it out and I was like, oh, I guess that's true. So I never go into it really like, you know, saying I'm going to do that. There was one book in a series that I did that consciously, you know, pull out something when there was Starbucks boycotts and things like that and change the name of a coffee shop. And that was a conscious, you know, that was a conscious choice. And, you know, there are some things, you know, you're consciously doing as you're writing, but most of the time I don't. It just sort of happens. I think you can only pull out, there are some writers who say, I keep it all escapism. I don't put my personality into it, but I question how real that is. How can you really take yourself out of your day-to-day, something that you spend so much time doing? I mean, you know, writing a book is a lot of hours, a lot of yourself, a lot of your time. I don't see how you can fully take all of your, it's not, you're not writing about yourself, you're not consciously writing about people you know, but how can you really take all of your subconscious thoughts out of it? I don't think you can. People say they can, but I don't think they can, truly. I mean, no, I'm not accusing thriller writers of thinking of killing people, murder, absolutely not. But, you know, certain things come through.
It's a personalized experience, even just the process of writing.
Yeah, sure.
And
the one question I do hate is when people are asking the ridiculousness of, you know, they get into the sexy scenes and things like that. Well, how much of that's like, that's ridiculous. People do ask that. And I think it's only a question that they ask women about writing romance. And they never ask, say, Stephen King about his murder books. Like, that is ridiculous. That is, you know, that is when fiction comes into play. Yeah. And I dare say most books are a romance if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of literature has those elements of romance, and even my partner, he wants romance in his sci-fi because that makes a really good character arc and building of story. So it's not considered romance, but the romance is still important.
Most sci-fi has a romance in it. Most sci-fi, most thrillers, most books. There's usually most books, movies, things. There's a romance thread that runs through it because you get that character arc. You get that motivation. Usually, it's a motivation arc that you get. The romance is the motivation arc. So we just shh and don't tell them that. That's the arc.
I have had this argument before with Sarah, and I don't know if she remembers it, but I have a firm philosophy that where a book gets categorized is based on who is, you know, going at who, because Jim Butcher and Laurel Hamilton tell the exact same story, but one's considered sci-fi and one's considered fiction. And there's really no difference other than who's getting in bed with who.
It's absolutely, I think it's very true. I will not get on a soapbox, but it's very true. And I think it's just a way, you know, to sort of put down the romance genre and calling it just a women's genre and things like that. And also, you know, the truth is romance is the genre that sells the most in fiction. Sort of. It carries the rest of the genres, and it's just their sort of way of putting it down. I'm like, that's a little sad. It's like, it's an ego. I think it's an ego thing that really doesn't need to be happening. And there's plenty of women who, plenty, including myself, my mom, that read, we read across genres.
When I knew you were doing a sequel to Real Men Knit, I thought that Not Again would probably be just a continuation of the Jesse Carey story. Ah. But I was pleasantly surprised to see that it would focus on Lucas. Will there be a total of 4 in the Real Men Knit series, 1 for each strong brother?
In my head so far, I'm hoping they will all get into print, but I plan for there being all 4 brothers. I definitely have stories for all brothers. I know what I want to do. I know how I see them developing. So yes, I will say yes in my head. They haven't been officially contracted yet by Berkeley, but we will see. But I see them all. They were planned out for all 4. Yes.
I'm really curious about Damien because I knew you're like
most people say that. Please feel free to tell Berkeley Romance
that. I will because he needs a sweet counterpart to chill him out a little bit. So
does he need a sweet counterpart to chill him out a little bit?
Or it could be, I don't know.
He needs something to chill him out a little bit.
He does. I'll have to wait until it's contracted so that I can read it.
I can't wait to write his story. I will say, if I do it right, it'll be very exciting and heart-wrenching. And poor thing, the characters are very alive to me. So I'm like, poor thing. Every time I think of him, it's like, you would think he's a real person walking in the world with all this baggage that I put on him. So I'm here going, poor thing. As if he was a real person, he would be carrying a lot.
He kind of holds everyone together at the same time.
Holds everyone together while he's giving them the business and breaking them apart.
Yes.
He's a tough one.
You had mentioned, you kind of described romance as being escapist. And when you get to romance, you kind of know that you're going to have a happy ending there at the end.
You do.
So what goes into writing a book with optimism in less than optimistic times?
That's a rough one because it's sometimes very hard when you're not feeling optimistic. And I'm really a total jaded person at my core. I really am the most unlikely person to be a romance writer. Anyone who knows me knows this, but I also am a huge fan of romance and I'm a romance reader. Thank goodness I'm a fan of romance because I am the person who needs that escape and needs that HEA to sort of like get through. I need it in my books. I need it in my films and in my watching of TV. I need laughter and all that stuff. Otherwise, I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't go on another second. I'll turn on the news and social media. It's like, oh, devastation. So writing optimism in these tough times, I write it to sort of lift myself up. And I hope I'm lifting someone else up. The way I go about it is I'm happy that I'm not writing towards a sad point. Like I know there will be a good point at the end, and that's the joy of romance. People think it's formulaic, but it really is not formulaic. Like you just don't know. And even when I'm reading a good romance, I know they're going to work out, but I'm like, how in the world? Like, a good writer will make you think, how in the world could this work out? Like, it just can't. There's no way. These people are just not compatible. So I know it's going to work out, but I do enjoy good banter. I enjoy good fights and I love stumbling blocks. So the fun of it for me is putting these stumbling blocks in and giving them all these trials and tribulations. Sometimes it's rough, but sometimes going into these worlds are my happy place. And usually I just get a spark and I do sort of, unfortunately, but maybe fortunately for my job, like to live in the world of what if and doom and gloom. So I put myself in the world of what if and doom and gloom, like what if this truck suddenly spilled cement all over my car right now and this happened and wouldn't that be horrible? And, and then what if this and what if this and what if this terrible, terrible, terrible thing happened? And then how would this person get out of it? And that's my little hope and optimism thing. for the ending.
It reminded me of the title, How to Marry Keanu Reeves in 90 Days, where it literally was something gets in the way and then you're like, I don't know if they're going to stay, you know, friends or, yeah. And then something pulls them back together.
Something pulls them back together. That's sort of the fun for me. What if this terrible thing, and I honestly, when I'm coming up with my proposals or when I'm coming up with my scenes, I just ask those questions. What if this happened and then this, and what if in this happened and what if in this and this and this and this and this and this, and that's sort of how I do it.
And one of the things that I enjoyed about Not Again, Real Men Knit, and How to Marry Keanu Reeves, there's kind of that early crush way back when, and then there's like a friend zone, and then there's a relationship that kind of blossoms. So what draws you to the friend to true love in your relationships within your titles?
I think I've done enemies to lovers. People put down tropes, but I enjoy a good trope. I really do. And I think lately what's been drawing me to these things is I'm very much into K-drama. So I really love, I so enjoy K-dramas and a slow burn romance. Those are just so much fun for me. I've been enjoying them for a couple of years. So I think that's been a really big thing for me. And I'm also a person that's been married a long time. We just had an anniversary, 33 years. So I've been married a very long time. My twins are now 28 and they're like, you know, into like, will I meet somebody? Da 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 da, and all that stuff. And I always sort of preach to them, like, you know, chill out, relax. But my big thing is saying, you know, friends first is like the most important thing. You know, I always tell them about my husband and I and how we started out as friends. And I'm like, you know, looks can fade, things change, and you're left looking at this person for a long time. You know, everything's not perfect. Everything's not, you know, a bed of roses, as they say, and you're just going to be with this person. So find someone who can make you laugh, who you're going to be able to have a great conversation with. So maybe a little bit of this is, you know, sort of, I'm now the older writer in the room preaching to people a little bit younger that you want to be, find someone that you can really let your hair down and be yourself with from the get-go and not, you know, put on a mask so much, and, you know, someone that you can really be friends with and talk to. And so maybe that's why I'm not sure why I'm writing this trope right now, but I think that might be part of the reason, someone that you can really say we're good friends.
Well, I've been enjoying it.
Thank you. I was thinking about that a lot. And it's like, why do you write this? And I really feel that if you have someone that you're already friends with, it's a little bit harder to hide from that person in the romance. Like, they can call you on your stuff quickly and be like, yeah, you're not being honest with me. You know, so you have to be a little bit more honest with that person in the romance. You can't, you know, put on the face, first and second date face or whatever, because they're gonna call you out right quick. And you're like, no. Like, you know, what are those heels for? You know you're not a heel person. What's going on? What's happening? What are you doing eating a salad? What are you doing with that tie on? Tie strangle you, you know.
I understand you are an idea board person.
I very much am. Yeah.
So how many story kernels do you juggle at a time?
Story kernels do I juggle at a time? Too many. I'm thinking there's a board over there that you can't see with too many, probably 10 or more over there in my head right now that I really want to be writing for, that I really, really wish I could be writing for, but I have to prioritize them. So there is one that I need to storyboard and start in 1 week for sure, dead and stinking, must start it. I really do want to be writing two at a time, but I figured out that I am a linear writer and I need to do one at a time. So one first, then one, the next one, then the next one, then maybe the next one. But goodness, I wish I could do at least two at a time, because I have four that I really want to write first and then on to the next. There was a quote that I heard from Beverly Jenkins, who I adore. She writes contemporary romance, but she is like a Black pioneer with historical romances. Like, seriously, Beverly Jenkins, love her. Like, worship to the ground she works on. She's so amazing. And she said in interview for our Romance Writers of America that she's like got ideas. The ideas keep coming. They really do. But she said, you know, like many romance writers, she's got ideas lined up like planes waiting for takeoff at JFK. And when she said that, I was like, wow, that's such a good visual representation of the ideas, how they come. It's like, oh no, when with all of my rejections and how painful writing is, writing really is, the ideas are so much fun. The planning of them is so much fun. The writing is absolutely painful. When you get past the first three chapters, I'm just like, when I get past the first three chapters, I'm like, why did I ever? I honestly have prayed, like, if this job is not for me, God, please take the ideas from my head. And they would just keep coming. It's like very frustrating. So most writers, the ideas aren't the problem. It's the work. It's the work part that's the painful part.
So going along that, what goes into the editing process? What survives? How much generally?
The editing process, oh goodness, too much. Oh, what goes into it? Way too much. The editing process is also painful. I don't know what's more painful, writing or editing. Writing is lovely when you get a flow, but that's a very rare magical twinkle thing that pixie dust falls on you. Editing is also awful at times, but I am very, very thankful when I have a good editor. Editing myself is, I just cannot stand it. I really don't like reading my own work. I'm really critical of it, or I just gloss over it because I know what I meant to say. So still when I'm reading it, I read what I meant to say. I am always, always grateful when I'm working with a very smart editor who can give kind but solid critiques. Like, I always try to get better with each book. I don't feel I've learned that I will fight for my words. I will, you know, I can argue with you back and forth about what the words should say in a paragraph and things like that. But when you give me a good critique and you say, well, this should have said that, and usually my editors are definitely right, I'm not so precious with my words. I'm not like, oh, I've written this and it's the greatest thing ever. It's just definitely probably not. And my editor is probably right. So I'm very grateful for a good editor who can give me a good, honest critique and make my work better. So the editing process is painful. Like, I'll get my edits back and I'll look at them and I will cry for a little while with red lines all through every single page. And this should clarify this, give meaning to that. You know, I've written full books where it's sort of like, did I write them like an old married couple because they never said I love you? It's like, did no one declare I love you in this romance? Oops. It's like, you know, whoop, messed that up. But, you know, and I'll show my husband the edits and he's like, did they even like the book? I'm like, I guess they, I'm like, this is just what editing is. But I've learned not to be so precious with my words. I'm a good storyteller and the gist is there. If I can get two or three smiley faces in it, I'm happy. So it's painful. The editing process is usually I need heavy edits, and it's usually more than two or three times, probably three. But I'm happy. I'm not happy for it, but grateful for it.
And I have an art background, and my sister is a knitter. So one of the aspects Yay. That connected, I know she's amazing at knitting. I don't know how she does it.
I am
it.
Not amazing. I oh. am a knitter, but not amazing at it.
I appreciate it. And one of the aspects that connected me to your lead female characters is they are all in the art field in some way. So Lou, she's a conceptual painter. Mm-hmm. Carrie, she works for art nonprofits and Strong Knits. And then Sydney is a jewelry designer. So I would love to hang out with them all as friends. I think we could hang out and have coffee and talk art. You have a designer background yourself. Can you share a little bit about bringing the art and design element into your writing?
You just reminded me that, yes, they all are. I was like, oh, I did that. yes, I went to FIT for fashion design.
Oh, cool. That's a great school.
It was a great school. And it's so funny. I always tell the story of it's like my design career was a little over 10 years. And I worked for a couple of different houses, and they weren't like, you know, couture houses doing shows in Bryant Park, that kind of thing. It was sort of, I designed for the outlets. I also designed for Macy's second floor when they had like second floor, like, you know, mid-tier kind of level things. So I would go back to Christina Applegate's Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead movie when she was like doing school uniforms. It's like, when she got the job and she was like, I thought this was a fashion house kind of thing. So that kind of story. But I did that for about 10 years. And I started writing after I left fashion, a couple of years after I left fashion. And I had to leave. Honestly, I had to leave because I had my twins. They were in school and we lost a babysitter and there was no one to pick them up. And my husband's job had the better health insurance. So that was my move into writing. I didn't just jump into writing after it was like fashion writing. I was looking for freelance work, got a little bit, but not much to pay the bills. I did part-time work at different stores and things like that. And one day, still an avid reader, I said, you know, I think I'm going to try. I had an idea. I wanted to write a book. Got plenty of rejections. And I remember saying, it's too hard. And my husband, being sort of flip, just sort of walked out of the bedroom. Well, you give up too easily is what he said, really flippant. And I was like, I'll show you. And it took about 10 years to get a yes. I think he might forever regret that, saying that, because he knows me. I'm like one of my combative heroines. I will never give up after I like take on a challenge. And that was, you know, how I got into it. But I always still bring in a little bit of my fashion background into study of design into my books, because I'm just a very visual person. I do Pinterest boards for my characters and to sort of bring, you know, visualization and color and things like that into my writing. I can't help it. Like it just makes it come more alive to me, you know, and I like to bring a little bit of that New York into it. It's just me. I can't help it. So I hope it makes my books come alive a little bit too.
It does. And it just reminded me when you were talking about that, the Strong Knit shop, like all the details when you were talking about what it looked like, I could picture it. So
good. I can picture it too. It's like in my mind, I hope someday there are no knitting shops in Harlem. Like there are very few. There's tons and not tons, but quite a lot in Brooklyn now. Brooklyn has, you know, been an up and coming kind of area with very many different types of shops and stuff. Even Westchester, I'm gesturing as if you can see exactly where I'm pointing. But if you were in front of me in New York, you would know. Westchester, there's some, but pandemic closed a couple of down. But there's like, I don't even know if there's any in the Bronx, but like Upper Manhattan, none. And there's not really craft stores or things like that. In the more urban neighborhoods, there's really not craft stores, knitting shops, things like that. And I remember as a kid, we used to have Woolworths, which you remember, I mean, this is aging me, but Woolworths was there. And my grandmother, loving crochet, would be like, you know, trips to Woolworths to get yarn and things like that. And strangely enough, my mother was a total wild child. So she's just wild woman now. You can't hold this lady down. I'm like, Ma, sit down. Can't get her to sit down. But we somehow, my mother's a very visual, tactile person. So she can crochet also, and she can sew and sort of make things. I don't know. I guess we're just a creative kind of family that way. And so she would be like a sewer picking up fabrics. You can get those from Woolworths and things like that. But those sort of things are slightly lost now in the city. And when you don't have stores, like, you know, you have Michaels and Hobby Lobby and those things now, but they aren't really in the city. It's kind of sad that you don't have it in like the tiny urban areas in the city. And so I think it's sort of lost there, you know?
And no, it's hard to find them too. I think anywhere.
Anywhere, you have to sort of drive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in New York, if you're right there in the city, you're really not. A lot of people have cars, but a lot of people don't, so they can't go and just easily get crafty kind of stuff. And I am a procrastinator at heart, but a crafty procrastinator, and I just enjoy all sorts of that kind of stuff. Always have. As a little kid, I was like queen of the let's make Barbie some clothes.
I was the paper dolls. I made paper dolls.
Yes. They were the best.
The best.
Oh my goodness. You give me a paper doll. I actually had the fashion plates.
Oh, I had those too. where you color the crayon.
Yes, those were hot, you know. So yeah, so I went from I was a math and science nerd girl, went to Stuyvesant, and from there went to FIT and got into fashion, did that. And then my boss said, no, you can't leave early to get your kids. So I ended up becoming a writer, but I was rejected by everyone in New York on the rejection list. And, but it took a long time. The way I actually got a contract was I ended up self-publishing my book called Bounce, and it won a Golden Leaf prize from the New Jersey chapter, the first prize. And I was as shocked as anybody, would I tell you. And I had a pitch session with an editor from Kensington, and I was so nervous because I'm really nervous talking to people with pitching, like, how do you pitch? And my pitch was, hi, I won the top prize last night. And she was like, good pitch, you know, and that was, she was like, great opening, you know, and that's what got me in the door.
Has pitching become easier over time, or is it still something that?
Oh, it's horrible. It's still horrible. Like when you would ask me, like, you know, well, tell me a little bit about your book. I'm like, huh? Did I write a book? Who? What? I don't know. It's always, yeah, these sort of like, so give us quick synopsis of your book, or that, you know, 10 second, what is your book about? I don't know. That's always a very rough question. It's very hard to talk about yourself or your book or your stories. Like, I just wanted to sit back here and just write, and somehow the world would know. Don't know how that would happen in this day and age of social media, but I was hoping.
You had mentioned that you tend to be a little bit critical of yourself. Do you think that being, having that overly critical trait has kind of helped you in your career? Or is it just something that you fight against and just keep on trucking on?
It's something that I constantly fight against and somehow just keep on trucking on. With every book, I'm probably too brutally honest when I talk. People are either going to completely stop interviewing me, or my PR people are going to say, no more interviews for you. With every book, I'm like, never again. Maybe I'm quitting on this one. I'm that overly critical. I'm like, no more. This is it. Nobody wants my work. No more. Yeah, I'm not good at it.
I think you'd have a lot of heartbroken readers out there.
I was just about to go, oh, no, I won't. I'll never be missed.
You'll be missed.
This is me. This is the critic in my head. No one cares. But thank you very much for saying that. You know, I'm like, it's like, I start out, and maybe it's the Gemini, I'm starting out, this is the greatest idea ever. And I'm like, this is the worst thing. That's just how I am. But there are sparks of my work that I enjoy and like. I love the Strong Brothers. I love, they are part of my heart. I think they're fantastic characters. I think the concept is amazing. And there are little sparks in the work that just warm my heart. And I think that's great. There are sparks in How to Marry Keanu Reeves, which I think is just the most fun concept. And there are actually little parts that I tried my hardest not to go back and read my work because I'm so critical of it. There are always things that I would want to change. But I do love it when people will come back and say, well, this made me laugh out loud. And it's usually something that I didn't think was a joke. People have branded me a rom-com writer, and they've said that I'm funny, but like, I never go out to be funny. I never try to write a joke or anything like that. I guess it's just my voice. Maybe it's because I'm a little self-deprecating and I just sort of write it as I write it. And if they come back and go, ha ha, I laughed here. And I'm like, where? What was, you know, so I enjoy things like that, or I enjoy if something as I was writing might have made me laugh, but I think no one else will get it. And if somebody gets it, sort of a little inside thing, I'm like, you're my people, you know, and then I feel like I found the right person. They might be few and far between, but I'm like, yay, we get each other. Like, I feel like we've got a little kinship. So that always makes me smile. And I think that Lou and True are just the sweetest in How to Marry Keanu Reeves in 90 Days. Mm-hmm. I love that they have this sort of shared connection. I've had it for a long time. I love the whole Keanu thing. That story is really special to me because my mother, I love Keanu, but my mother is the hugest Keanu fan you will meet. When I tell you, the reason I wrote that book, the reason I wrote that book is because I actually saw a tweet that not saying that he was getting married, but saying that the next Matrix and the next John Wick were supposed to come out on the same day, but it was right before the pandemic happened. Mm-hmm. So when I saw the tweet, I did a quote tweet that said, "Don't bring out your next book on Keanu Day unless it's that How to Marry Keanu Reeves in 90 Days rom-com." And I hit send. And after I hit send, a bunch of people said, I'd read that. And I was like, oh no, I might have done something. And I called my agent. I was like, I think I did something. And he was like, what did I tell you about putting your ideas out there? Now you have to write me up a synopsis. And I said, I don't have time. I have like other, he said, well, if you don't, somebody else will. And me and my personality was like, oh no, I better do it. So I sat down and wrote him up a quick, I sat down and did my what if questions. Since I didn't have a starting point, I started it from a tweet. I said, what if a woman sees a tweet saying Keanu Reeves is getting married in 90 days? And that's how the book was born. And I happened to be talking to my mother the next day and I told her about it. And she said, I was just watching Keanu on the Netflix. She calls it the Netflix. She goes, you know how much I love him, blah, 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 blah. So this is pretty much her book.
Oh, that's so sweet. I didn't realize the origin of it.
That's the exact origin. Like you can find the tweet. It's on my Instagram. You can find the tweet and everything. That's exactly how it is. Like, you know, from here to, you know, soul to forever romance.
And with the rom-com element of it, you're our first romance author on Unstacked.
Thank you so much.
Except for the fiction where it's trickled in, but it's not a romance. Except
all those fiction novels where there's definitely exactly. a thread of romance, but we won't talk about them.
We won't talk about that. But your books have like the perfect amount of like sexiness for me. I'm not into the Showtime HBO sexiness. I want just a little bit. I don't like to blush too much.
Too much, because then people will just know what you mean. Just a little
bit. I know. But I wanted to know, what do you enjoy most about writing romance?
What do I enjoy most about writing romance? It's definitely going to work out in the end.
Yeah, the happy ever after.
The happy ever after. That I'm writing to a point where it's definitely going to work out in the end. I enjoy that part about it. Definitely going to be an uplifting something at the end. I can't say like, you know, there is a, you know, there's the dark moment. Do I enjoy that? That's fun. A close second will probably be the banter. I enjoy writing the banter and the bickering back and forth.
And
I have to say that it's kind of sort of counterintuitive, isn't it? But I do enjoy writing the banter back and forth.
And then you have your two perspectives kind of bouncing back and forth, the both of the romance leads. And when you're writing the banter or the chapters that kind of speak to each other, do you kind of do it in a linear, or do you kind of have an outline and then fill things in?
I do it in a linear way, unless every once in a while I will grab my phone or grab a Queen of the Sticky Note, grab something.
Me too.
And this is usually, you know, after midnight or something when I'm in the shower. Always things happen. Always something will happen driving or in the shower after you close the computer, after staring at the blank screen all day. A full scene will come to my head or a full conversation will jump in my head. And then I have to jump out and like quickly type into my phone the words that just jump into my head. Like I can hear voices and there's arguing and saying this. So I'll jump on my phone and type those words in real quick before I forget them. And then, you know, send a note to myself and remember those words. But for the most part, I have to write linear. I have tried going out of order and writing things out of order, but it just really doesn't work for me. I'm like, this will be much faster. This will work. And it somehow slowed me down. So I have to just sort of go linear and in order. I'm like, let's write this person's full story and this person. And I would love to do that with the next story. I feel like it, in theory, would be so much easier. But I know me. I don't think it will. All my friends are like, do it in Scrivener. And I have Scrivener and I keep buying Scrivener. And it's going to definitely work in Scrivener. I miss old Word. It's so sad. They're like, you know, you get the Scrivener app and it'll do. I'm like, yes, I know. I'm paying for it all. And I'm still opening Word yet again and transferring things to Word yet again.
you know what works for you.
I do know what works for me. My friends in my writing groups are like, and I'm like, I'm up against the wall, I'm doing this. And they're like, okay, how many years are we going to just tell you this is your process, Juana?
I understand that your grandmother was a huge influence on your works. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, that she was the first person you were stealing romances from.
She was.
Do you recall any of those first ones you got your hands on?
I don't recall the names of them, but I know that they were the little Harlequins. She would always have the little Harlequins and read a little bit of them at night before she went to bed. My grandfather, who he's passed away, but I was talking about this recently in a chat, and they're like, this is so romantic-ero. And I was like, I guess it probably is. We lived in the projects. We were on the 15th floor of the projects. And like, who does this? My grandfather, obviously. He built her a new bed, a platform bed with a headboard, one of those like bookshelf headboards. Like, how? I do not know, because he built it in the bedroom, in the project. Like, how did he bring the wood up and built it in the room? Like, the wild, right? For her books and stuff. They're like, that's very romance hero stuff. And like, when I tell you, like, I love my grandfather to death. Like, so, he was so such a hero to me. But like, the man never, like, the type of man who would, like, never say two words. Like, to hear his voice was like, oh, he's talking. Oh, my goodness, you know? That type of man, like a truck driver, come home from work, go in the room, come home from work, all these kids in the house, because she was taking care of the kids, walk in, rah, 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 slam the door to the bedroom, changing out of his work clothes, you know, nothing much, dinner time, no conversation, that kind of man. But meanwhile, he's building a bed with a headboard for the Harlequin romance.
That is so, it is so sweet. And I bet it would be hard to like move the bed. Like, that is, it's built, it's got to stay there forever.
So like, when you think about it, that is so hilarious. And like, aww, you know, like, not a word, but like Valentine's Day, I will never forget, he would give her the biggest, like, frilliest box. And they used to have those frilly box of chocolates, you know, mm-hmm, with the frills on the side. You can't find
them.
She'd get the biggest, frilliest box. And then all of us girls would get, like, it would go sort of down in size and hierarchy. Down to my little petite one, because I was the youngest, you know. So like, sweet. My mom would get one slightly smaller. My aunt would get one slightly smaller, like, down in age. Very cute.
It's very sweet.
Very sweet alpha male, tough guy, corny stuff.
Since each relationship is unique, how do you study relationships?
I guess I study relationships mostly by just observing people and being a nosy Nelly, like really being extremely nosy and taking mental notes of different people's relationships. I mean, I've been an avid romance reader since 10 or 11 years old. So that's one way of studying relationships. I have tons of writing books on character arcs and personalities and things like that. And the way I read writing books is probably the way most writers read them. Never cover to cover. Like, there's never a full one you read. You're sort of like looking for, look through for a personality type that you want. So that's another way. But really observing people and relationships around you, relationships you see everywhere. Being in New York is a great way to study relationships. So I've been a lifelong study of relationships. Just everywhere you go as a writer, you just study people. And that's what I do and what I probably have done all my life. I always say I had two, and it's in my bio, like, two dreams to be a writer or a fashion designer. And I'm, you know, doing both. But I remember being on the train or on the bus commuting to work, and I would play this game of making up stories about people on the bus, like, you know, looking at people walking in the streets and stuff like that, and just making up stories in my head about them, or making up stories about couples and stuff like that. So I guess I was always kind of writing stories about people, or, you know, talking about them and what their relationship is like. I mean, my husband and I sort of still do that. It's my habit. Yeah.
Romance writing tends to be like a genre that is very feminist in nature, where it's, you know, you kind of have female focus. It's for women, written by women kind of thing. So why did you decide to go with male protagonists?
Ah, I was really strong about wanting this series to be about the guys running the knitting shop. There are quite a few romances centered on women running a knitting shop, but I really wanted to bring the focus on the guys running the knitting shop and show the vulnerability of the Black men, and they're all different ethnicities, but men of different ethnicities showing vulnerability. I don't think we see that enough in romance, or see that enough in a lot of different genres, that men can do something that is considered so-called feminist, even though men have been knitting for since forever, that men can go through grief in different ways and have these traumas, and, you know, have to go through all these different stages when they're in love and they're really just being emotionally vulnerable. They can knit and be creative and, you know, not be tagged as being feminine because they're being creative. I just wanted to show all these different aspects of men that are in my life that I know. I am the oldest sister, the only girl with brothers in my family, you know, and they all have, you know, different personalities, and they're all alpha kind of guys, but they're also squishy mushes, which they will never admit, but they really, you know, they really are, you know, and they have strong feelings, they fight like crazy and whatever, but they love really hard and really strongly, and then they can get mushy. I have twins, I have boy girl twins, and you know, when your mom, a boy, girl, twins, it's like, let's just do things together. I taught my daughter to knit and I taught my son to knit. We're doing this together, you know? And what's the big deal? You know, there's no gender attached to that. You know, we're going to Taekwondo, not my son's going to Taekwondo. We're all, you're doing it too. Like, so that's just sort of like how I am. I taught my husband to knit, and he's not the best knitter. He makes me do turns for him, but he found it very meditative for himself, and they're, you know, sort of therapeutic and meditative. I was like, you don't just have to do this for me in my book. He was like, no, he was enjoying it watching football because he felt that he couldn't think about bills and the other worries while he was knitting. He was like, he enjoyed trying to just focus on doing the stitches. So I really, really wanted this to be a male knitting shop focused thing to show that, and to show Black males in sort of a different light than what we were getting in romances in general. Not all romances. There's plenty of other Black romance authors doing that, you know, but I wanted to show them knitting for a little bit of a different hook, you know. It was very important to me.
I see the pun you threw there. A different hook. I see that pun.
Oh! I missed it. You saw it and I missed it. Thank you. Thank you for snagging it. That was a good one.
I was curious, what are you currently reading/watching?
I am currently reading, I've got an arc of the next book from Kennedy Ryan, Before I Let Go. It's going to be out November 15th, which is like, and everybody is like, so good. Kennedy Ryan is amazing. So she is coming out from Forever with Before I Let Go. So it's like, ooh, I'm so excited about that. It's going to be fabulous. Everybody who's read it, who's got an early arc of it, it's like 5 stars. So amazing, amazing, amazing. And so that, and I got Almost There by Farah Rashan, which is young adult, but it's a Disney princess retelling.
I always am up for that.
See, it's right here. Oh, Almost There. It's Tiana's story. What if Tiana made a deal that changed everything? And it's like, cool. Farah is one of my accountability buddies. And this one, I'm so happy. She has made the New York Times for like 6 weeks in a row with it.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah.
So that is what I am reading. What am I watching? Well, last night I was a day late, finished watching Game of Thrones, so
you're ahead of me.
House of Dragons, so I have thoughts.
I haven't watched that one. I just finished The Rings of Power, which is the...
Did you? I have to catch up on that. I only saw two episodes of that. Did you like it?
The dwarves. I love the dwarves. I loved it.
Okay.
Episode was okay, and then it kind of ebbs and flows. When they fight, I'm like, boring, but the character development with the dwarves, okay, and the Harfoots, I love.
Okay. I'm going to have to let myself get really into it. Like, my husband is the biggest Lord of the Rings fan, like huge Lord of the Rings fan. I really, really enjoy Lord of the Rings a lot, but it was taking me a minute to get into Rings of Power. So I'm going to have to, now that House of Dragons is done, I'm going to give it a minute so I can really, like, we can sit now. Well, he still has to watch House of Dragon. He can never keep up with me. So we'll see. But I have, like, issues with House of Dragons. Like, it was too short. It wasn't, to me, as developed as it needed to be. I was like, this feels very pandemic-y. It was like,
oh no.
It was just so fast. It was like, oh, whatever, many episodes, and it's like, whatever. But, you know, it's fine. I'm like, it was fine. It was fine. It was fine. I'm not going to give it a bad review. It still had me totally engrossed, though. Totally okay. Engrossed. But like all the Game of Thrones things, it was so dark. It was filmed so dark. I was like, can we brighten my screen?
Oh, yeah. Just as the coloring of the footage itself. The coloring
of it all. Mm-hmm. They make them so dark. I'm like, I can't see. I'm close. I can't see. I told him, I said, I'm going to watch the final episode. He's like an episode behind me. He's like, do you need the TV? I said, no, I'm watching it on my computer. I'm putting my screen on bright. And I'm going to be like this. So that's what I'm watching. And probably a new K-drama. Something I'm always watching K-dramas.
We play a game here.
Okay.
You might know it by a different title, but uh-oh. Sarah asked me to keep this PG. So we call it Mary Ditch Kiss.
Gotcha.
So I'm going to give you two categories.
Okay.
I've disguised these categories under some, you know, some funny names. And you pick one of those two categories. And from there, I will give you three items that you will either like, love, and one to get rid of. So the categories that you get to choose from are Under the Skin and Kitten Please.
Kitten Please.
That was the tagline for Key and Peele's movie Keanu. So I'm going to make you choose some Keanu Reeves is here. Yay. So you're going to have to marry, like, and ditch Keanu Reeves from Bill and Ted, Point Break, and John Wick.
Oh, wow. Do I have to ditch? Okay.
And those are three dramatically different Keanu Reeves is there.
No. Okay. What is it? Bill and Ted.
Uh-huh. Point
John
Break.
John Wick and Point Break.
Uh-huh.
Marry, oh God, oh, I want to marry John Wick, but John Wick's always going to be on the run and I might be dead. So should I marry Johnny Utah? If I marry Johnny Utah, I won't be dead, but I really want to marry John Wick, but I'll be dead.
But see, yeah. I mean, he's already got that tragedy in his life. This could be the rebound.
This is hard.
There's no guarantee on that on any of them.
If I will live. Okay. John Wick for Mary, if I'll live and not be killed. Not be killed, please. Oh, goodness, please don't let me die. And don't let him die. Then I'm marrying him. Kissing on Johnny Utah from, okay. And then I have to ditch.
Aww.
Ted, I'm sorry.
Ted,
you're a little dumb.
Ted Theodore Logan.
He's a little bit of a pain. I mean, it's like he would just, oh gosh. He'd be like raising a toddler. I've done that.
I mean, if you had told me back in the day that the guy who played Theodore Logan and the guy who played the idiot, you know, idiot husband in Parenthood was going to be one of the biggest actors of our time.
The idiot husband in Parenthood, he was cute. Now I would kiss.
We have I've got some rapid fire questions.
Okay.
I'm going to put a minute on the clock here and we'll try to clam through as many as we can here. Do you learn by watching or doing?
Do you learn by watching or doing? Both.
Ryan Gosling or Keanu Reeves?
Shoot. Oh, shoot. Keanu Reeves.
Something you wish you had written.
Something I wish I had written?
Mm-hmm.
In this economy, it's a controversial. Oh, shoot. I can't say. I'll just say the best-selling book that's out right now is all I'm going to say.
First Sight or Second Chance?
Love at First Sight or Second Chance? Second chance, because I'm going with not again.
Sounds good.
Most romantic thing you've ever done?
Oh gosh, that I don't know. Most romantic thing I've ever done? I'm not that romantic, unfortunately. Having a gift for my husband, having my kids spell out, I love you, Dad, and with those body letters. That's the only thing I can think of right now.
Movie you enjoy quoting the most?
It's so many. I am a movie buff, so I'm always quoting movies. I'm going to say off the top of my head right now, because I just quoted it, Coming to America. What is that, leather? What is that, velvet? No, what is that, velvet? That's it. What is that, velvet? Yes, I watch a lot of, I'm like the pop culture queen. Like, isn't that made a lot?
And we are a library podcast. So how have libraries impacted your life?
Oh my goodness. I love libraries. Libraries are such a joy to me. I am like the library queen. How have they impacted my life? Well, I've always loved libraries. Guess I get my joy of libraries from my mother, who is still an avid library goer. There is a picture, it's either on Twitter or it might be on my Instagram too, of my mother the other day. I think she might be holding How to Marry Keanu Reeves in 90 Days. And she is from like last month. She was at the Mid-Manhattan Library and found my book there. So she's looking all teary-eyed and snotty because she, during her lunch hour, she just goes on excursions. Like, I don't know how she does these hour and a half excursions around the city, but she's like the Flash. She's like,
wow.
And she's at the Mid-Manhattan Library and she finds my book. So she had the librarian take a picture with her looking all teary holding my book up. I was like, Ma, I love you so much. So we are a big library family. And it's just, I'm getting teary. I don't want to do that. I'm really tough. I'm a tough girl from Harlem. Don't get teary. But yeah, so it has had such a wonderful impact on my life. We are a big library family. We are the type that, like, you know, go and put holds on 50-11 books and maybe not read them all, but read a lot. And like, you know, I love to go and get like all the craft books that I can't afford and take them out and learn new crafts and things like that. So yes, we love the library. We're big on the library. One of my personal best favorite moments was taking my kids to the local library where my son used to, next to where my son used to play t-ball. And I would go there a lot when, you know, his practices were going long and like, you know, go and sit in there and hang out and take out books and read and write and go to the romance section, of course. And they had a couple of my books there, and taking them to be able to now see their mom's books there was like, it just was the biggest joy. So yeah, we love the library and my family. So yeah, I feel really, you know, honored. It's a big deal. It really is a big deal.
What is the strangest thing in your search history?
I'm not telling you that. I can't tell you that. I'll just say it's a lot. It's there's quite a bit. As a writer, it's quite a bit of stuff there. I don't even know what's the strangest thing in my search history. If I think it, I search it, and I think a lot of stuff. And the only thing I could say is I'm a writer and I think a lot of things. I get a lot of ideas really from things that just come up. Like I said, the Keanu book came from a tweet. To Me I Wed came from me seeing a piece from the Huffington Post about a woman who got married to herself. She wasn't dating in prose. She said, I'm going to throw a wedding for myself. So I get a lot from just what I see, news articles, pop culture. So if I like get an idea, mostly I'm an insomniac too. I just sort of like, I'll just go on these tangents and threads and just go with it. And how do you do this? And how do you find that? And what is this, you know, and what is the headway, the human headway? And, you know, any question, I'm Googling it. It just goes on and on. So there are a lot of strange things. And the funny thing is my husband works in computers and he does like, for a law firm and stuff, he is just like, and then forget all my saved pictures since I'm a visual person. It's research. Don't look at that guy. It's research. He just doesn't, he doesn't even care anymore. He's like, eh, I'm an old bad habit. So yeah, he knows he's not going anywhere. So he doesn't even care. He's like, you are you.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Just thank you so much for having me here. I'm really honored to be your first romance author, and I hope people will give, you know, look me up and give me a try. Try out Real Men Knit and Not Again and How to Marry Keanu Reeves in 90 Days. I think they'll enjoy each one differently. If you want a fun rom-com, look me up and give it a go. I hope they enjoy it because I've enjoyed being here.
Well, we have definitely enjoyed having you here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Quanah, for joining us on Unstacked. Not Again is available in the library collection for checkout.
It can also be purchased through your favorite bookstore and online vendors. Check out her website, kmjackson.com. That's kmjackson.com.
Stay safe and read, my friend. It's good for you. Bye.
Bye.